Guess how many points I got today from Starbucks?
I was going to ask.
25 points.
25. In one visit, you earned 25 points.
Yes.
No wonder you're so wired. You're like bouncing off the walls. Would you buy the gallon size?
No. So my mom taught me Starbucks rewards you if you bring your own cup in. So my mom goes through and she tells the people, they know her, and she tells the people, I brought me a nice clean cup and I would like a caramel macchiato. And so she goes in with her cup. She gets a whole bunch of points. So she told my sister. My sister started doing it. They got like 1,000-something points. I didn't have any points like that. So today, I got my cup all nice and clean. So this will now be my go-to Starbucks cup.
All right.
And then they filled it up with the drink I like, and I checked my points, and I got 25.
You know, back in the day, parents would teach their children skills of life, like how to build a house, how to gut a deer, how to make clothing. And here we are, 2024, and your mother's teaching you how to get Starbucks points. Boy, how we have devolved as a society.
Don't sleep on Margaret. She can teach you how to make stuff, too.
Let's do a volume check.
Okay.
Welcome to episode 27 of Black, White, and Blue in the South, a podcast discussing Democratic politics with a Southern flair. I'm Bill Kimmler.
I'm Jamil Brooks.
And this is part two of our rebroadcast of the episode we recorded with Barrett Gruber, host of the All About Nothing podcast and ruthless dictator of the big media empire, which is slowly beginning to dominate the podcast infotainment world.
Yay, Barrett.
Yo, see, she did that. She did that thing where she snuck in just as I finished a sentence. It's like we're this married couple on the air where we're finishing each other's sentences. It's amazing. We recorded with Barrett in November of last year, so the topics we discussed may not be quite up to date, but it was entertaining nonetheless. Mm-hmm. If you like what you hear in this episode, please leave a rating and a review. Tell your friends about us. Follow us on social media. Or better yet.
Oh my gosh.
Check your school's bathrooms for kitty litter. Because our state senator, Billy Garrett, here in McCormick and Greenwood, South Carolina, has proof that kids are being allowed to identify as cats and are being accommodated by school staff with kitty litter in school bathrooms. Let's play this clip. You can hear what Billy Garrett testified in a hearing in Columbia just last week.
You're suggesting that some teaching is going on in the school system that's training people?
Yes, I am.
I would defy you to cite me to an example in South Carolina where a child has said that didn't want to do this, but I was taught to do this by my teacher. You've got some example of that?
I've got an example in Greenwood where a young lady was authorized to be a cat or call herself a cat, a feline, and so that was encouraged. I've got proof of that, even to the point of asking them to put a litter box in the bathroom. So, I mean, that happened in Greenwood County. So,
but that wasn't not something that the school was teaching.
All I can tell you is they were going along with it. I don't know whether they were teaching it or not, but they were going along with it until others stepped in and said no.
All right, Jamil, what do you think about that?
I have so many questions about this individual.
Are you talking about the litter box individual or Senator Billy Garrett?
Well, him too.
Okay.
So, but you know, this is a thing that's always interesting to watch. And I love that you can see the recordings of actually them responding to whatever they're being asked. You knew when they said, I want you to give me proof, he had nothing. He almost wished he could disappear.
It was evident. You're projecting. I think he sat there confident that he had the proof.
Until somebody said, really?
Well, I'll tell you what happened a couple of days later, and you can find this article in our show notes. It was exposed. Billy Garrett started walking back his statement. You heard him say that he had proof.
He did.
Now he's saying, well, I heard it from a grandmother.
My grandma told me.
Not his grandmother.
I thought he said his grandmother.
No, he said he heard it from a grandmother at a Republican women's meeting in Greenwood. Somebody told him that. So here's the question I have. He was at a transgender medical care hearing, right? And you're trying to ban it. We talked about that for two episodes. So now it's in the Senate. And he was at a hearing where many of those same experts were paraded in front of him. We're talking, you know, educators. We're talking pediatricians, medical professionals, counselors, parents, family members. They all came out and testified. Did he listen to any of them?
None.
No. Who did he listen to? A random grandmother who watches Fox News sharing this story, which, by the way, is all over the nation.
Let me just say,
all over the nation, they're saying this.
I'm not even going to put this on his grandmother. I'm now questioning that he ever heard that even at that meeting.
Oh, interesting. You think he made up this grandmother?
I'm going with he made it up. She doesn't even exist. She won't stand behind
that. That is an allegation. And if you're a grandmother listening to our podcast, although I doubt that you're that person, but if you have evidence that this indeed was shared with Billy and he didn't make it up himself from watching Fox News or OAN or whatever's out there, please let us know. You can always drop us a note at blackwhiteblueinthesouth@gmail.com. Send us your comments, questions, topic ideas. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, and Mastodon. We share video clips of our episodes and links to news articles that will make you more informed. We have a Linktree page that can connect you to everything. So look at those show notes where you'll find that and links to all material mentioned in today's episode. And now on to part two of our guest appearance on the All About Nothing podcast.
Mike Johnson, currently the Speaker of the House, he's an odd unicorn for
he is shaking some stuff up.
Yeah, he is an odd unicorn for the Republican Party. On one hand, he is fundamentally Trump in his beliefs and how he has represented himself. But he's been really quiet in some sense, because I think for the most part, you know, when all of a sudden it wasn't Jordan and it wasn't Scalise, and it almost seemed like they may fall back and go ahead and just elect McCarthy back into the speakership. But like out of nowhere, it was like, oh, well, here's Mike Johnson. He's a fundamentalist Christian who believes that abortion shouldn't be available to anybody even 2 or 3 weeks before conception. he has his own list of books that should be banned in schools. Apparently, he wants to reverse gay weddings.
Yeah, he does.
He believes in the electroshock therapy that could potentially...
Conversion therapy.
Yeah, well...
His wife actually ran, I think, a conversion therapy center or was affiliated with one.
He represents so much of what...
Mike Johnson was the we give up candidate.
Yeah.
Because remember, this was like 21 days of Congress doing nothing. Yeah. And those Republicans were just getting the living crappy out of them by the nation, by the media, by everybody, and rightfully so. And they just gave up. And I bet you if he was one of the first on the ballots, you know, in this first week, he wouldn't have gotten any votes and he would have had withdrawn. But by the third week, by the 21st, 22nd day, they were just tired. And there was like, all right, whatever, dude. So they all signed right on board. There was nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
So he was the we give up, we throw in the towel candidate, let's move on. And hopefully people will forget that we shut down government for 3 weeks while we figured our stuff out.
I'm hoping no one forgets that. So here's my biggest problem with Mike Johnson. Well, this isn't the biggest problem, but this is the biggest problem that sounds the funniest. He represents a district in Louisiana, but he doesn't have a Louisiana accent. But I guess that kind of is par for the course, because Scalise, also from Louisiana, doesn't sound like someone to me from Louisiana. But then you've also got John Kennedy, who doesn't sound like somebody from Louisiana. It sounds like somebody from Oxbow, Mississippi. Isn't that where Forrest Gump was from? I can't remember. But like... Of course, I guess Kennedy didn't sound like that before he moved down to Louisiana, right? He's in Louisiana. Anyway, Mike Johnson, I think, is the poster child for what the Republicans want people to see and think. But I have to believe that this is another situation that isn't going to work out well, because some of his most extreme views are not aligned at all with what 70 to 75% of the majority of Americans believe. Most Americans believe that there should be a right to abortion, despite the fact that you've got these fundamentalist Christians out there that are all, you know, life begins at conception.
And let me ask, Jamil, could you pick Mike Johnson out of a lineup?
That's a good question.
If you had a bunch of white guys with glasses and ties, could you pick out Mike Johnson?
No, he's typical. He does not. He does not stand out. And I think
he is just so bland.
Yeah, I think that's the goal. It's like, get somebody we can just put here and hopefully he can be a puppet and they pull strings. But clearly,
see, this is this is what I do. So Mike Johnson was elected Speaker of the House. If you're watching on YouTube, this is funnier. So Mike Johnson was elected to the House. And if you don't know who Mike Johnson is, you're wrong. This isn't it either. It's actually this guy right here. That's one of those John Oliver, Stephen Colbert skits where they put up, you know, this isn't Mozambique, you know, but you wouldn't know because he's he's basically you could take any stock photo out of a frame being sold at JCPenney. Yeah,
really? And that's him. That could be him.
Because you know how I know he was the I give up candidate? You just take a look at Nancy Mace. Oh. Right. So Nancy Mace was one of the few that voted to kick Kevin McCarthy out,
right?
To the shock of many. And the reason she gave was, well, Kevin McCarthy promised to help with legislation for some women's rights, you know, more rape kits, less focus on abortion. She was, you know, all pro-woman, and she says that was important to her. And then she goes around and says, I'm perfectly okay with this guy, Mike Johnson, who's, you know, happier in the Handmaid's Tale world than in the real world.
Yes, yes.
And supports him. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. She is just a typical talking out both sides of her mouth politician. She has no stance. She's got more flip-flops than Lindsey Graham does.
Nancy Mace was on The Daily Show this week with Charlamagne the God, and I was dumbfounded, one, that she went on The Daily Show. When it was Trevor Noah and Jon Stewart, Republicans would go on there because they thought they had the ability to debate somebody of their caliber, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. But when The Daily Show brings on these guest hosts because they haven't selected a host yet, and I don't know that you'll ever find anyone as good as Trevor Noah and Jon Stewart for that type of show. Even Charlamagne the God he flat out asked her. He said, you know, because she was up there saying about how there was so much mounting evidence against the Joe Biden crime syndicate, which to me is just absurd. This idea that Joe Biden or his family have some sort of background in mafia type programs, you know, they're running some sort of a waste management facility out of Philadelphia or New Jersey. Sorry to mention Philadelphia again. But you know, it's just this idea that Joe Biden would be capable of doing something like that. I don't see it.
And meanwhile, Nancy Mace flew up to New York to stand in front of Trump Tower, which I believe is owned by the state of New York now because of his criminal behavior. Absolutely nuts.
Does Trump own that? I mean, does the Trump family or the Trump Enterprises or whatever their business conglomerate is called, but do they actually own Trump Tower, or is it just that he's leased his name on the building?
You're asking me an area of expertise that I could care less about. So I honestly don't know.
That's fair. But yeah, no, Nancy Mace, at one point, while I didn't give her much respect, I lost a lot of respect because when Charlamagne asked her specifically, what about Trump? What about all the evidence against Trump? And she's like, what evidence? He said, well, you know, any one of the 91 indictments counts against him. And she said, well, which indictment? And he was like, Georgia. She goes, I haven't seen the evidence. We all saw the evidence. We've heard the phone calls. We've already had, three of his own lawyers have already said that they would turn evidence against him if it got them off the hook. So
the Republican Party needs to do away with that elephant as their, you know, little favorite animal and replace it with an ostrich, because they do nothing but stick their heads in the sand
exactly.
and pretend like this stuff doesn't happen or it doesn't exist.
Exactly.
But I always say that party is the king of distractions. They will, you know, create the biggest puff of smoke. So while you're not looking, they're behind the scenes coming up with something else.
Yeah.
And that's all this is. She's saying, what evidence? Lady, pick any piece of it. She can bump into a piece of evidence right now and see that Trump is guilty.
See, and I've always operated without discretion as far as if Biden is guilty of something and he's indicted for charges, that means that a grand jury has looked at evidence and said, yes, we believe that there was a crime committed and that there is enough evidence here to support a conviction.
Yeah.
I believe that if Biden or Hunter Biden had done anything more than carry a gun when he wasn't supposed to, then...
Which is half of South Carolina, by the way.
Right.
Bill, I was, you know, I was going to yell that out, but then I thought, do I want water now or not? But yeah, like, that's everybody. Like,
I am absolutely dumbfounded by the number of people that are not going to support the Republicans, that will not support Hunter Biden's right to carry a firearm.
And that's all they're saying.
Right. It is absolutely insane to me that they won't support Hunter Biden and his right to carry a firearm. Like,
because it's not really Hunter Biden. It is Joe Biden.
Right.
And anything that we can do to dismantle whatever he has taken a stance for or whatever he's attempting to build. So Hunter just happens to be in the way.
Yeah.
And listen, if I had known it was open season on Sons of Presidents, man, we really should have done in Donald Trump Jr. when we had the chance. But you know what? The Democrats are like, no, no, no. Family's off limits. We're going after the guy himself.
We try to
We learn our lesson.
Well,
guy should not be walking around free right now for something.
Let me ask you both, as far as how do you feel about how the Democrats wind up attacking members of their own party when their own party has done things that are considered unethical?
Give an example.
So yeah, Senator that used to be on Saturday Night Live was out of Minnesota, the comedian.
About Al Franken.
Al Franken, yeah. So in that situation, Al Franken did not have due process. He was not convicted of a crime. He wasn't actually even accused by an alleger or a victim that he had done something wrong. That simply it was a picture that was posted of him pretending to grope someone that was in full Kevlar, full body armor, who was asleep in the plane that he was flying over for a USO tour.
It's a different world, Barrett. I mean, the guy came out of the world of comedy. So if he's going to have some inappropriate humor photos floating around out there, that should have been the least shocking thing. But you're right. Back then, we had standards. And Al Franken didn't get kicked out. He resigned.
Right.
It came with pressure. He didn't have to resign. He could still be the senator right now if he had stuck to his guns. But he was like, you know what, for the good of the party, and he was going to be the better man, he stepped aside.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I think that was more of a him leading that. And I'm not going to say he probably didn't hear from members. I'm sure that he's heard from some of his colleagues that said this would be the best thing to do. But he could have stayed.
Oh, well.
So let's talk about an actual criminal in the Democratic Party.
Yes.
You got Senator Menendez out in New Jersey. This is the guy that's got gold bars tucked away in his coat pockets in his closet.
You know, he says he's not leaving because he's innocent.
He literally Googled or asked someone how much gold bullion from Saudi Arabia or whatever, like, or Egypt, how much was a kilo of gold bullion from Egypt was worth?
I got no patience for that type of
goofiness. I don't either. So like that's one that I'm sure there's something.
Oh,
else.
Here's another one. Who was that representative, the congressman who pulled the fire alarm in that building?
Oh, yes. So what was the story on that?
Explain exactly what happened, because I know that there was a vote. Did he pull the fire alarm to give himself more time to make it to the Florida vote?
What was his explanation?
All right, so his name is Jamal Bowman.
Yeah.
I had to quickly look it up because I really didn't know him from a hole in the ground. But he was in another building, and there was voting going on for some sort of budget CR resolutions. And
yes,
it was a very tense time. But he was in another building away from where the votes were taking place. He pulls the alarm. He claims he was thinking he was opening doors, or that was like an emergency release handle. He was all levels of confused. And you know what? I actually bought that story for a bit when it came out that this building was nowhere near the vote. I'm like, okay, so then what purpose does it serve to pull the alarm? Maybe it was an accident.
Yeah.
But then last week, additional camera footage came out that showed him taking signs off the door that says, closed or emergency only. I don't even know what the signs are. But he pulled the signs off the door, then turned around and pulled the alarm. It's like, what is that nonsense? He has got to go. We don't have time for that type of silliness in the house.
He knew that was wrong. That was wrong. I mean, listen, he wouldn't be the first that went and didn't cast a vote. I mean, we see that a lot. So you could have just missed that.
I mean,
but meanwhile, it's tough to stand your ground when you've got the other party who's entertaining MTG and Lauren Boebert, who's groping each other in a theater, and who's that other guy who's fake, the fake congressman from New York?
What's his name? You're talking about Santos.
Santos,
George Santos. Yes. Yeah, they're sitting there fully entertaining him. So I don't know why we should be all holier than thou and do the right thing when obviously the other party has stopped giving a crap ages ago.
I think that was essentially my point, was that we've moved past the age where we hold politicians to a higher regard than we would. We don't hold these politicians anymore to a level of ethics that we would say, a religious leader or something. Well, I can't use religious leaders because a lot of them are more fallible than you know.
Well, good thing we hold Jamil up to a higher standard. She's an angel. In fact, we can see her closet. There's no skeletons in it.
Listen, I wanted to say about Santos, I don't know if y'all saw the article that came out recently where it talked about 31 Democrats joined the 182 Republicans to keep Santos in place.
I don't get that.
And I'm thinking to myself, what are we doing here? Nothing about that seems right.
Right.
But that came out from the Hill.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, so yeah. I'm under the impression that when you make it to the level of being in the Senate or in Congress, in the House of Representatives, especially House of Representatives, because it's the same as essentially what you would do here in South Carolina if you're in the House, mm-hmm. you are running every 2 years, which means basically you are elected and then you are almost forced to start running for the next campaign.
Yeah.
So I guess my question to you both would be, what is your opinion on term limits? And then second to that, what length of term do you think would be appropriate for Congress as far as House of Representatives? Because right now it's 2 years. That doesn't seem, my opinion is, it doesn't seem like that's really enough to get anything done yeah. without the thoughts of how is this going to impact my campaign that literally starts next month.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I do think that 2 years... You've really got to go in. If you're going to go in, you've really got to go in with a plan. You have to have met with your constituents and know exactly, you know, and studied the data of your district to know exactly what the needs of the people are. And you've got to go in ready to work. Like, yeah. you can't go in and just sit there because those 2 years will be gone before you know it. Now, you know, if you're an individual that's communicated the plan, and it's very visible that you have been actively working to pursue the goals that will benefit your constituents, then you can be productive in those 2 years. So nothing tells you to go in there and hold your hands. Some people are very productive. Some people are not. So I think that's about your time and what you do with that time. And the other thing to consider is, in the House, you can be productive not just by creating your own bill, but by co-ing with someone. If you co-sign with someone, there's a bill that's there. So there are things that you can do to represent your individuals, your constituents, and have a good presence there. 2 years, I think you're right. When you go in there in 2 years, and as soon as you're in, you're learning the House, and the next thing you know, you're running again. Well, the running should come natural. So even though you're running, you should still be able to focus on what's going on in the House because you've already ran. So that part's going to come natural, but that will take time. What do I think about term limits? I'm actually for term limits. And here's what I would like to see on the Democratic side of things. I would like to see more Democrats train their replacement.
Oh, okay.
And here's why I say, this is why I say I'm for term limits. And I don't think the term limit has to do anything with your age. Let me just put that out there, because what we're not going to do is age shame or do age discrimination. I'm not going to do that. But if you're able to function and meet the duties that are assigned to you, regardless of your age, then go right ahead. But I think the term limit comes in because if you know that this is your final term, or this is your final 2 years if you're a senator, or this is your final year if you are a House of Representatives, I think it would be really good for you to have already trained your replacement so that when you go to turn the mantle over to who it is that you're going to support in this race, since it won't be you, you're not throwing them out there with no type of support. And you're also not leaving your constituents left with who's going to babysit us now? Like, who's going to watch us when, you know, our parents are at home? Sure. Like, who is going to take care of us? So I support the term limits only to ensure that as Democrats, we don't just leave our constituents hanging. We transfer that responsibility. I look at it like in a work scenario. I once resigned in January from a company, and I worked until December training my replacement. Could have left. I didn't leave because I knew the goal of the company. I was bought into the company. I really took the time to leave so I could finish my doctorate. And so it went well. It doesn't
sounds
go well
to me like you're just terrible at resigning.
No, I needed to go. And then they said, hey, are you going to go? I'm like, yeah, I got to go now. But, you know, train your replacement, because whatever you were passionate enough about in the first place to run, you should still have that same passion when it's time for you to move out of the way.
Yeah. Jamil, I'll just say this. When I left my last job, I wrote up documentation literally on the tiniest, as much possible information as I could for the person that was taking my place. Because at one point they were talking about hiring somebody to take my place. And I was like, well, that doesn't leave any time for me to give any sort of training. So obviously the guy that worked under me prior to my departure, he was the most appropriate for me to hand that off. I literally gave them folders and folders of written technical documents on how I performed my job to the nth degree, only for after my departure for them to go, this guy's not worth it. We're glad he's gone. It's like,
but wow. That's a reflection of them. That is not a reflection of like how cool you are. You did what you were supposed to do.
Right.
And that's what we've got to understand, that while we are there, when it's our turn to serve, we have to serve like we can't serve anywhere else. Like this is our last opportunity to serve. And then when we leave, regardless of what they think, we know that we've done what we were established to do.
All right, I'm going to take an opposing view. I am not in favor of term limits until the Supreme Court gets term limits first.
Oh,
I don't like lifetime appointments.
I don't like it.
So you've got to have, you know, let's make it 18 years, I think was the proposal that's on the table. And 18 years is a long time.
Sure.
It's three Senate cycles, you know, but after 18, you're forced out. And then whoever's president then has to appoint somebody new and go through the process again. I don't believe in lifetime appointments for a role like that, because you end up with people like Clarence Thomas, who just feels he's above God's law at this point. Yeah. And does whatever he wants.
You've got Roberts. Roberts has only been in there for what? He's been in there for less than two decades, correct? I mean, was he a Bush appointment? And he's the chief,
right? I don't know.
But like, you now have these Supreme Court justices that, you know, the whole idea behind the three-piece system, legislative, judicial, and executive, is that there is a check and balance to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. We literally have Supreme Court justices that ignore subpoenas from Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, or during something just recently where I think the Senate was trying to investigate some of the information that they were getting about the Clarence Thomas stuff and things like that with his donors and whatnot. They basically just say, no, we're not going to show up. And to me, you're now in contempt of Congress. Why isn't someone going after them? And, you know, why aren't the Capitol Police now pulling in justices in handcuffs and saying, no, you can't be in contempt of Congress. They told you to be here.
What was the good debate we had, Bill, where we talked about them not wanting an ethics committee to investigate them? And I'm trying to think which judge it was that pretty much just gave the finger and said, you know, there, you don't have any, the Constitution doesn't have anybody in there that can.
Oh, you got that Samuel Alito.
I was going to say,
there you go.
That I was going to say, that either sounds like Alito or first one that Trump got in there after he got elected. Yeah. But yeah, I'm dumbfounded by this idea that we have representation. I mean, Jim Jordan has not responded at all to the subpoena for the January 6th commission.
Yeah, we did a whole segment on Jim Jordan. I learned a lot about that guy.
He is, you know, for a guy.
Do you have any South Carolina topics we can riff on?
Yeah,
we've been hitting national stage.
I was gonna say,
I want to take it local.
South Carolina, none that I think. Well, let's see. We did Nancy Mace and her terrible appearance on The Daily Show. No, I know we're going to be going. They're going to be going back into session. What, starting end of January?
Beginning
of January.
Just after the new year.
I suspect that we're going to hear more about the lack of need for any sort of gun laws, because I know that there are Democrats that are already saying that are in the House that are going to be pushing for, or not in the House, in the Senate, they're going to be pushing for more stringent gun laws, because we're still seeing gun violence in South Carolina continues to rise. And I don't have the number in front of me, but I know in South Carolina, our gun violence is now eclipsing the national statistics as far as.
Were we number five? Is that what you reported? We were number five.
When it comes to mass shootings,
yeah,
we were number five in the nation. Now, you probably don't even think that, because we don't have, you know, the big school shootings like we hear around. But a mass shooting is anything where there's multiple people shot. They don't actually have to have passed away.
Right.
Multiple people shot. It happens all the time in South Carolina. Yeah. We have the fifth highest rate. And these people that say, well, you know, you get all these liberal cities with these Democrat-run mayors and crime is rampant. Dude, take a look in your own backyard. Number five in the nation for mass shooting rates.
And I keep saying this. It's not like we're in gun smoke. So there's going to have to be some structure. We're not saying, and I'm not saying, eliminate guns. That's not what I'm saying.
No,
but
of course
I am
not.
Saying put regulations in place to protect innocent people. which is what we should want to do.
Yeah, ultimately, I think that there are definitely people in our country or in the world that probably should be considered less safe when they own a firearm.
So, yes. Barry, here's my platform. And I'm not going to deal with a specific topic, but in general, we have to wake up in this state and realize we have legitimate problems to face. And are we, as elected leaders of this state, going to address those problems directly? For example, being number 5 in the nation for mass shootings. But people say, well, the guns aren't the problem. It's stolen guns. You know, those are the issues. Well, guess what? South Carolina is number 4 in the nation when it comes to stolen guns. We're number 4. So how about we, as a legislative body, a General Assembly, not worry about saving women's sports, which was the stupidest name for a piece of law that I've ever heard. There was no sport that needed saving. There's no numbers out there that support that they were in danger. Stupid. A lot of work went in that. Why don't we tackle something to deal with the stolen firearms? Why don't we put some packages together to enforce safety training, enforce lockboxes, get certified? Nope. Instead, they're cutting it down. And the problem is just going to get worse.
You don't need certification. That's what they would believe. So but you got to have it for everything else.
I want to tackle our real issues of poverty, health, accessibility, education, as Jamil very eloquently talked about earlier. There are real problems we should be dealing with. And instead, they spend more than half their time on this extreme right nonsense where they make up a problem and then run with it for years.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example of that. So, and I said this, and I don't like to, you're going to learn, Barry, there, some people I don't call their names because I kind of think like Beetlejuice. I don't want them to appear. So I try my best. And if you listen to Bill and I, it's very, I might say the people that I am referencing, or I might say this individual.
Yeah, I'm always guessing who she's talking about.
Yeah, because if you say it 3 times and they pop out, we got problems. Okay.
I'm going to get her to say Candyman in front of a mirror 5 times.
Happening.
Bloody Mary.
That's our next episode.
I think about, you know, the group that is leading these book bans.
Right.
All of the passion, all of the aggression and the assertiveness that's put towards book bans because they want to make sure that they can save the children. Yet we have school shootings occurring
right
around us like it's nothing. So can we redirect that energy to something that's a real problem? Here's what I would like to say. I would much rather my child have the opportunity to check out a book and bring it home so that we can have a discussion about what's in it than for them not to come home at all
right.
because they were involved in a school shooting.
Yeah,
our focus and our priorities is screwed up here.
One of the things that I was dumbfounded by was a list in Lexington County 1, School District 1, there was a list of the books that the Moms for Liberty or whomever wanted to ban in South Carolina, Lexington 1, which actually then turned into a whole fiasco where they got lawyers involved. They were going to fire teachers that weren't going to whatever. The list was a list of school book or a list of books that were available at the high school that ultimately they were trying to ban these books from the elementary school. So above middle school, these books would have still been allowed because it wasn't that they were inappropriate for middle schoolers or high schoolers, but they were using this list of available books and saying that these were books that needed to be banned from the elementary school. So there was actually no actionable anything there that was going to occur. It was mostly just they wanted to get out in front of a camera, and the news organizations wound up reporting on it because they made it sound as though elementary school kids were being subjected to books that were way outside their reading level. But then when you did the investigation into it, it was like, oh, wait, these books aren't even available at the elementary school library. And
waste of time.
Most of them aren't even in the middle school library. They're only available to high school students.
Listen, they banned in Arkansas. They pulled a book or flagged it for removal because the author's last name was Gay.
I saw that.
That was her name, Gay, G-A-Y. And it got flagged for removal. That's how idiotic they've gotten with this.
Well, and then meanwhile, South Carolina is trying to use the same tactics that they use in Texas, where they literally will bring these pallet boxes in, and they'll go through in any book that they look at and the cover looks potentially offensive for a child to read. They just throw it at, like, they don't even know what the context of these books are. And yet they're making a judgment on something.
So So I'm going to say, crazy. So this is what I need for people to do. And you're absolutely right. It's ludicrous. A couple of things. One of the things I would like for people to do is if you are going to be this strict on what a child could potentially read, because here's the catch. Ain't nobody running in the library saying, here, you take this book home and you take it right now.
Right.
That's not how that's going down. You have a skilled person who has a master's in library science. Okay, look, that's not an easy degree. So you are credentialed in this field and you select books. And a lot of times it comes from like the top booksellers, like the young adult authors that are, you know, things that are reflective. And sometimes children look to escape. They look to learn. They look to learn how to advocate for themselves through books.
Right.
So to have someone who's on the outside saying, hey, this is it. How about parents have a conversation with your child if it's that big of a problem?
Jamil and I did we had a whole discussion about one children's book called And Tango Makes Three.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Those dang penguins.
Yeah.
Those dang blang penguins. Two cute little male penguins based on a true story at a New York State Zoo formed a pair bond, and the zookeeper decided to give them an egg to hatch and raise, which they did, and they formed a little family unit. When these people say, well, how do you allow pornography in these children's libraries? And they'll point to that book as an example. Two male penguins raising a baby penguin as pornography. And that's where I just don't have tolerance for these conversations.
Well, I'm just checking. And, I don't know these people. So I'm just going to say I'm asking for a friend. I'm not asking for myself because I really don't even care what they think. But here's what I'm asking for a friend. If they own books like this, are they checking to see what television shows and series and Netflix series that their children are binge watching?
Probably not.
Have they checked their scroll history, their log history? Do they see what sites they're in and out of? Do they see who they're following on TikTok? Do they see who they're following on Instagram? I need people to busy themselves with some stuff that really matters. That's not it.
I'm going
to
make this observation. I'm guessing that the generational gap between the people that are the most offended by what they think is going on and the people that are actually being offended or affected by what is in the schools is so far apart. I mean, that's like McMaster's having anything to do with public school education.
No, Barrett, I disagree with you. I watched the school board meeting in your district there, and parent after parent.
That's true.
Younger than you.
I know.
That were up there being a whole bunch of Karens. It was a Karen parade.
Yeah.
And they were just up there just going absolutely bonkers, saying the dumbest things.
But
I couldn't believe it. I was like, really? You were born in the 80s? You were born in the 90s? And you're talking like this?
And I guarantee you, every one of them watched Friends or watched Seinfeld or they watched these television programs that were prolifically popular during their adolescence, and how they converted themselves into what they are now, these individuals. But the legislators have the ability to cast a vote that's going to impact them. The generational gap between what it is that they represent and the children that it's going to affect is, to me, it's dumbfounding. McMaster's has this idea that students in South Carolina are being taught incorrectly or they're being taught the wrong values. And it's like public education isn't designed to teach anyone.
Would he want us to teach the values where he want to hunt down all what the Democrats? Like with dogs?
Right.
Is that the values he wants us to teach? Because my thing is, I'm going to need for him to refrain from involving himself in that conversation as well, because you can't say what values each household has to teach. Who doesn't know ethics and morals? Those are your values.
Right.
Those are your cultural beliefs and how you were raised. That is what you impart on the children that you raise. So I'm telling you, better keep your eye on what is happening, because when they start to, and I'm speaking primarily for anyone who's supporting book bans, and we want to, even the superintendent of education is saying she wants the state to determine what books are going to be read. Has she lost her mind?
Jamil, I want to point out something you said earlier, because we're falling into the trap. Like you said, this is a distraction.
Yeah.
We just spent 20 minutes talking about it, but we weren't talking about low test scores. We weren't talking about
students
in poor, underfunded schools. Teachers who still are below the national average in salary,
even
with all the raises they got, we get distracted and we fall down this rabbit hole and they end up winning.
Thank you for saving me. Thank you for pulling me out, because
You said it. I just used the rope you threw out there.
Well, surprise guest, Karen Weaver's here with us, so we can... no. And if you thought that was Karen Weaver, it wasn't. This is Karen Weaver. Okay, sorry.
Karen Weaver?
No, because
Ellen Weaver, Karen Weaver, whatever. No, you're absolutely right, because that essentially distracts from what the actual issues are, which are,
yeah.
Are the students in South Carolina, first of all, as an educator, I would just like to ask your opinion, standardized testing, is it a valued source of, or is it a valued application to the education of the children, South Carolina or beyond?
In my opinion, Dr. Jamil Brooks, the answer is no.
Okay.
I think that standardized testing is a distraction. I mean, districts have to do what they have to do in order to present the numbers and get the funding that they need.
Sure.
So I get that. But in terms of, is this a true picture of what we're dealing with? I don't think that it is. And in a state where we say that we want to be career, college and career ready, a standardized test does not necessarily get a student there.
Yeah. No, I agree.
We have to pick. I think it's a waste of time. I teach in a CAPE program. So for me, I'm not on the standardized testing portion as much as some of the other programs are, but I do teach a computer science class that you can get AP credit for.
Okay.
But, and I can tell you that if you're looking at the other standardized tests, I don't know if y'all notice or not, but I'm Black. I'm sorry, Garrett.
But, I'm out of here.
I'm sorry, but I need to tell you this so you'll understand if y'all can't tell, I'm Black. And so here's what I have witnessed, and there's plenty of stats out there, and there's the research out there that prove it. Typically, African-American students overall will test lower on the standardized questions because those questions aren't written to appeal to the African-American population. That's a big issue. So if you're going to tell me that standardized testing determines if I'm going to be successful or not, write the test for me.
Right.
Write the test in a way that it appeals and I can relate to the questions and be able to answer them appropriately. So I don't think we can use standardized testing because it's not for all.
Right.
Everything Jamil said is 100% true. I don't know, Jamil, if you knew this about me, but you knew I used to teach as well.
Yes.
Back in the Stone Age. But I bet you didn't know that I spent almost 10 years with a company called the Princeton Review teaching standardized test prep classes. So I started in college and then went all the way through for another 10 years. I taught SAT prep, GRE prep, MCATs, LSATs, and GMATs. So I was trained to teach them all, and I took the LSAT for law school. I got a perfect score. Okay. Does that mean that I was going to be a good lawyer or have a chance in hell at a law school? No. It meant that I knew how to beat that test. And the fact that my 6-week course that I was part of could raise their scores by 200 points, I didn't make any of them smarter. I didn't impart grand knowledge on them, but I did train them how to take this test and look for those key words and look for the secrets and tips and tricks. Yeah. Totally beatable. And for that reason alone, they found in a study, this is what I was told, so I didn't see the study myself. They said that there was a higher correlation between your blood type and your success in college than your SAT and your success in college.
That's
what we were told. And you know what? I believe it.
I think there was even a debate a couple of years ago about removing the SAT or the ACT, one of the two, from the entry level requirements because like the credibility associated with that particular test on whether the student was going to be successful or not had been jeopardized. It was damaged. Like there was no direct correlation. So we're looking like take the test. And then you had schools at one point saying, we don't want it. Just come on. Let me see what you got. Let me see your transcript.
Yeah.
That type thing.
Well, Bill, I've invited your old boss at the Princeton Review. Did you know that Bill was sorry. And if you thought that was Bill's boss, it wasn't. It was this guy.
We are not going to do this, okay? Both of y'all. Put the mask away.
Well, listen, this has been a really terrific conversation. I think we definitely need to continue it into another episode very soon because...
Well, this was just the warm-up. You're not recording, are you?
He is recorded and we are done.
Oh, crap. I gotta go back and think about what I just said.
No, I am so glad that I was able to get you both on the show because, like I said before, it's your show, Black, White, and Blue in the South, is extremely informational, but it's done in such an entertaining way. And between the two of you, it's such a good rapport that you both have together. And if anyone's listening that hasn't listened to it before, you have to check it out. Black, White, and Blue in the South. And it's available across all the podcast platforms. Both Bill and Dr. Jamil are running for House seats here in South Carolina. I assume your donation pages are all up and ready to go. You're taking your...
I'm going to give you our Linktree links that you can, that'll direct you to all of our social medias and accounts and all that stuff.
Yeah, as well.
So I encourage you to follow us so you can hear and see what we're like beyond just this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we do take a lot of issues seriously. I do have a favor to ask of you though, Barrett.
Please ask away.
At the end of your podcast, The All About Nothing, which is how I found you.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You have your trailer bumpers where you list out all of the podcasts in your media empire.
I know.
And Jamil and I are last. We're last.
Yeah.
We're at the back of the bus. DJ Lanza has not had a damn episode in 15 years. So I don't know why he gets preference ahead of us.
Alphabetically, since we've talked about education, black with B comes first.
That's right.
So Trent, you want to get that up.
Trent, what they're saying is you need to record an episode or else you're getting bumped to the back of the back of the
bus.
If you thought this this isn't Trent, but yeah, no, plus I actually need to go back and record that because I definitely used the Bill pronunciation of your name.
You didn't. You made up your own pronunciation. You didn't even go close. I called her Jamel forever. Jamel.
What is it that I'm saying?
You're calling her Jumile. I mean, you put like some sort of French twist on it. Dr. Jumile Brooks. And then you're like, Italian.
I think it was Siri once before was like Jumali. And I was like, wait, we're drawing a line here somewhere.
that's a pronunciation too far.
In fact, what I expect is that when I say it correct now, and I think I'm getting better, I actually expect like a little, good job, Bill. Good job, Bill. I need that positive reinforcement.
I say that.
No. I'm not getting it enough. I want more of that.
Wow.
I say your name right. I say Jamil. You say, good job, Bill. Good job,
Never Bill. Forget Thank how entitled white people are.
Are you see it? It's there.
No, not entitled. No. Needy. Needy as F. There's a difference. I don't feel entitled to it, but I need it.
That's great.
All right. Thank you both for being on the show with me.
You're welcome.
It's been terrific.
5 hours is what it's been.
This has been one of our longest podcasts in the last while. Probably because I'm not confined to the potential of being charged more for rental. That works out very well. All right. Again, check out the show. It's Black, White, and Blue in the South, available across all of the podcasts, including YouTube now. So you can, if you're the type of person that watches podcasts on YouTube, which by the way, the whole Google podcasting is going to be going away. It's all going to be converted over to YouTube. So YouTube Music is where it'll be. And actually, I know several people whose podcasts are more popular on YouTube Music than they are on Apple. Make sure you're subscribed somewhere because you want to know when these episodes come out. All right.
That's right.
I am going to go through my ending spiel so that you guys can laugh at me as I stumble across.
Let's see what we can do to drag this out even longer.
That'll work. All right. That is going to do it for episode number 180 of the All About Nothing podcast. Thank you very much, Dr. Jamil Brooks. Thank you very much, Bill Kimmler, for being on the show with us. Links to all of our past episodes, podcast platforms, and merchandise and social media are available on our website, theallaboutnothing.com. If you think our financial model of giving away free content and entertainment is silly and you're in the giving mood, why not become an official Nothinger to support the show? Visit theallaboutnothing.com and become an official Nothinger just like Mr. Bill Kimmler here. You'll find a support link near the top of the page. You can subscribe monthly at a varying level of membership tiers, or you can click on the tips link and even drop us a one-time donation. If you want to, you can join in the conversation as well. You can join our Discord channel by clicking on the banner at the top of the webpage. Please subscribe to the show. Link to all of our Facebook, Twitter, and all other social media is available on our website. Please share all this with your family and friends. Thank you very much for listening. And Bill and Dr. Jamil, I will let you all give a tagline for the end, because what I say is you all stay safe. And then what would you all like to say to everyone?
So my tagline to all of my students is go be great.
That's good. Bill?
My tagline is super fantastic.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
That's a wrap for this episode of Black, White, and Blue in the South. We thank Barrett Gruber and the All About Nothing podcast for allowing us time on their show and for them being a great advocate for candidates from all across South Carolina. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. Please take a quick minute and leave us a rating using your favorite podcast app and a review of what you heard today. If you do, it will help keep kitty litter out of our school bathrooms and allow only for newspapers to be laid down on the floor, which is much more appropriate. If you are a blue dot, you can laugh it out. See, they're trying to hold it in. That's not healthy. If you are a blue dot in a red sea, keep the faith, keep up the hard work. Change only happens over many years of work and dedication, but every long journey begins with a single step. So let yours be taken today.
The end.
The preceding podcast is a product of Big Media and copyright 2024, all rights reserved.